Hello, Internet. My name is Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble. Happy Halloween, Jonathan. Happy Halloween.
From the future? Is that from next year's Halloween? Because I know you're ahead in Australia. It's not even October anymore.
You are right. You are right. But it's I guess it's just been Halloween, and you're in America at the moment, so I guess you're a bit closer to the past Halloween. Did you do anything exciting for Halloween, Jonathan?
I went to an early Halloween party. My girlfriend and I went as Don and Megan Draper from Mad Men.
Oh, I saw the photos.
But not just them from Mad Men, from a particular episode of Mad Men when they go to Hawaii.
Yes.
So it was a multi-layered costume.
So the great news for all our listeners is Jonathan has gotten into Mad Men. He's on the Mad Men bandwagon. He's coming dressed up as references to specific episodes, and we are going to get that Mad Men podcast our fans have been waiting for so long. Correct, Jonathan?
That's the most amount of Mad Men coverage I think a Screen Verdict has given the show so far. We're moving in the right direction for you Mad Men fans.
Yeah, so we're very excited. Final season of Mad Men coming soon. I just finished my own Halloween party, a bit of a late Halloween party. Thought if I had it on the Friday night, might get a few more people. And the plan was to come and watch a movie, The Shining. You know that horror movie?
Yes, that was playing at the party I went to.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. Oh,
what? It's the choice.
Someone had brought a card game about werewolves, and we played that instead. So that's what we did.
How long into the game did you get your shirts off? I know werewolves have no need, cannot stand the shirts.
And then quite a few people left, but some people were still keen for a game. And I'm not sure if I ever played this with you, Jonathan, but I dusted off the old The Apprentice game. Did you ever play that with me?
I don't think so. We do like The Apprentice.
It was a good one. Donald Trump actually runs.
How many people do you need?
Two. It's a two-player game.
Wow. That sounds like a podcast.
Yes. We could do a podcast where we play the Apprentice board game. if you're interested, it's very good. The board looks like this.
Wee.
And you press these buttons.
Congratulations. You should be very proud of yourselves. You've just been chosen to play The Apprentice. This is hands down the best game ever made. Red team, scan each of your competitor cards.
How good is that?
I'm in.
You're in? Oh, this sounds good. Oh, man. I'm so excited. So we'll do that when you get back to Australia.
But for now, we're going to do a podcast, a little bit of an interesting one I'm looking forward to doing. Now, sometimes we do previews or reviews. This time, what we're going to do is talk about some shows that have just started, just come on the air, have a couple episodes out, and we're going to let you know what we think of these new shows and whether you should be watching them. But there's a little bit of a twist.
Whoa.
As to why we chose these particular shows. What's that, Matt?
The twist is they each start an old favourite of ours from something else on TV. So someone that we've really loved the work of in previous TV shows, and they're coming back. So we're excited to see how they go back on TV.
Very exciting. So what are the shows that we've got?
The Blacklist.
Featuring James Spader.
Yes, from The Practice / Boston Legal. We've got The Crazy Ones.
With Robin Williams.
From Mork and Mindy.
You may have heard of him from other things. He's quite famous, Robin Williams.
But that's the TV show he used to be on. So this is, okay. He's also been in things like Aladdin. Not The Return of Jafar. biggest career mistake of his life. The Michael J. Fox Show.
Who's that got in it?
That's starring Betsy Brandt from Breaking Bad.
A return to TV for Betsy Brandt.
Yes.
Will the Michael J. Fox show live up to Breaking Bad? That is the question that we'll be answering on the podcast.
It also stars Michael J. Fox from Family Ties and Spin City. And we've also finally got The Millers.
Featuring someone that played the greatest sitcom character of the past 20 years, according to a little podcast, Screen Verdict. It's Will Arnett, famous for playing Job on Arrested Development.
Yeah, so we're very excited to see him back on TV.
So we're going to go through all of these shows, let you know how our old favourites are doing on new shows and whether you should be watching. And I think we're going to start with The Blacklist.
Yeah, I think of all the shows we mentioned, this is the one that's buzzing up the water cooler the most, I would say. It's got a lot of advertising down here in Sydney, would you believe? And I hear from you that even in America, there's quite a lot of billboards and things up for The Blacklist.
Big billboards, big bus, stickers. Can't catch a bus without looking at James Spader's grinning mug.
Yes, it's not too different here. This must be a bit of a worldwide craze. And interestingly, in Australia, they're calling it something a little bit different to The Blacklist.
What are they calling it?
They're calling it James Spader's The Blacklist. That's what all the posters say, James Spader's The Blacklist. And the ads go on next week's all-new episode of James Spader's The Blacklist. In the TV guide, that's what it says as well.
Not that I think it's entirely undeserved, but I don't even remember James Spader being that well-known in Australia. I'm pretty sure Boston Legal didn't even get aired primetime. It's like 11:30 p.m. on a Tuesday.
And the people who talked about Boston Legal always talk about Denny Crane. Like, I didn't even know if anyone knew who James Spader was in Australia. They do now.
Whoever created the show, you know, like John Bokenkamp or whatever he's called, he's like, really? It's James Spader's show? Okay.
Yeah, he's clearly the most marketable name in Australian television is James Spader. But deservingly so, because we love James Spader.
Yeah, James Spader, famous for his character of Alan Shaw, which began on The Practice. And even though he only joined at the very end of the series, because he was the one that managed to get the spin-off with Boston Legal. And Boston Legal ran for 5 seasons, and I put it possibly in my top 5 drama shows. I really, really love Boston Legal.
That's high praise. It is very good. So not undeserved praise. And maybe he's most famous for, James Spader, his betrayal of Alan Shaw, topping the Screen Verdict best drama character since 2000 list.
We weren't kidding when we said that these were favourites of ours.
Yeah.
Doing new shows.
So It's great to hear he's back on TV, a big network show. It's doing well in the ratings. And, I agree. Like, he came in the 8th season of The Practice, stole the show. He was the best thing about that season, got the spin-off. His speeches are so good, his quirkiness, a great actor, great character. Won 3 Emmys for The Practice and Boston Legal. So the industry loved him too.
Paved the way for Jeff Daniels, set the bar of what was required to win an Emmy.
Yes, definitely. So, Jonathan, you've seen some of this Blacklist?
Yes, I've caught the first couple of episodes. I was a bit wary going into this because I haven't really been watching any network drama shows recently. Now, I don't even know if we've done a review on the podcast. Are we cable drama snobs, Matt?
Well, we did do a podcast where we talked about some new faces on old shows, which I think this podcast is sort of in a similar vein in some ways. And we did review an episode of CSI on that, the first Ted Danson episode of CSI. So we will be prepared to dip our toe in the network drama waters.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you're reaching at all there, Matt. And I would say perhaps there's two reasons. I mean, we do like some network shows. I mean, I love Boston Legal. The West Wing, your favorite show, was a network show. I would say it's probably two things. I'd say in the last couple of years, cable drama shows have sort of taken over as the leading drama shows. And also, they're often 22 episodes, the network shows. That's a lot of episodes to watch. There's a lot of effort to put into a review.
Yeah, I would say if we were doing a podcast when The West Wing, when Lost, when 24, or when Boston Legal were airing, we would have done podcasts on all those shows.
For sure.
Yeah, so, you know, networks, pick up your game. Maybe they have with The Blacklist. So what are you, so The Blacklist is a show. It's James Spader walks into the CIA. Is it the CIA or FBI?
I thought it was CIA.
Yeah, okay. It doesn't really matter. He walks into one very casually, introduces himself. So he's got a meeting with some guy, then backs down, takes off his jacket, puts down his briefcase, kneels on the ground, puts his hands behind his head, and all the police come in and arrest him. Very cool as a cucumber. And it pretty much the idea is he goes, yeah, I'm this guy who's been helping terrorists, I'm on your most wanted list, but I'm going to help you get those terrorists if you guys don't, like, throw me in jail or kill me or whatever.
I was kind of hoping that he'd do the stand-up and button his suit before he walked into the place.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an interesting premise, this guy who is... I think they said something like the number four on the most wanted list, someone that you would expect to be on the run from the cops, perhaps a season two of the Prison Break type scenario, actually turns himself in and while in custody, I guess, barters with this knowledge that he has on other high-profile terrorists or criminals. But you're also wondering what's his real endgame.
Yeah,
he's always a step ahead. He's always got a trick up his sleeve. You're always wondering what's the real deal here. And one of his demands is that he will only speak to the new girl.
Mm.
How did they get Zooey Deschanel for this show, man?
I don't think it's Zooey Deschanel.
Oh, it's a different new girl.
Yeah, no, so it's a different new girl. But this is quite interesting. It seems like he's got quite a lot of affection for her. I don't necessarily mean in a romantic way, but he's quite protective of her and he only wants to speak to her and he sort of seems like he helps her a bit along the way too. Now, I had a friend that told me they don't really like The Blacklist because they think it's way too predictable. Obviously, he's her father.
He does seem to know a lot about her, but he seems to know a lot about everyone. So I don't think him being her father would necessarily give him that insight, but it is still possible that he's her father, and that's why he has so much of an interest in particularly her. I hadn't thought of that, but I guess your friends called it. They've called it pretty early, so if that turns out to be the case, well done to your friend.
Well, I said I didn't think it was the father because I thought that was too obvious. I thought that they wouldn't make that the father, so I've got...
So we've got both bases covered. And yet, yeah. Whenever the answer to this is revealed, either Matt Noble or one of Matt Noble's friends will get to gloat on the podcast.
Yes. Though the person who maybe should be gloating if I'm wrong is my mum, because we're watching the first episode of The Blacklist together, or James Spader's The Blacklist, whatever you're calling it. And she said about halfway through the first episode, oh, he's her dad.
The writers of The Blacklist are going to be very disappointed with the response if that is their season final big reveal, the big twist at the end of the season. Matt's mum is going to be, 20 minutes in, I've said that. Episode one. Devoted half a year to this show, and that's what I get.
My mom's loving The Blacklist. She's so excited for it every week. So it's pretty much every week it's a procedural. There's a new terrorist on his blacklist that he helps them catch.
I guess you have week-to-week bad guys that he somehow has information on that they're about to do something.
It'll be interesting to see how this show sustains itself. And I don't even worry about the first season as much as just this show is rating pretty well in the States. Like, sustaining it for, like, 4 seasons, 5 seasons, the ratings keep this strong. So it'll be interesting. We'd hate to see a Heroes scenario where it's very strong out of the gate and then drops by. And you've got the procedural element, and then I guess you've got the overarching element of the relationship with him and this girl and the other sort of mysteries that are sort of running along.
Yeah, you do get to find out things about their past, some things about, is it her husband or fiancé?
Mm.
So there are some on-running elements to the show that perhaps might take more of a forefront once the week-to-week terrorist plot foiling begins to get a little bit old.
So, Jonathan, The Blacklist, James Spader, what are your thoughts? What are you liking this show? Is it worth watching? What do you think?
Well, I like the premise of the show, and it's quite fast-paced, but I think almost to its detriment. I think it's trying to keep things moving so quickly to the point where it has to dumb things down a little. It's almost pandering to you, as if, oh man, if we're not changing things up, doing something crazy or changing the setting or something happening every 20 seconds, someone's going to change the channel. I'm like, no, I just want to sit down and watch a complex plot unfold. You know, I'm prepared to give you a minute or two of my time for that to happen. But I feel like the show is a little bit choppy, and therefore some interesting things that happen don't really have that much weight given to them. Which I think is part of it being a network show, not to make it all about that. But it doesn't have quite the gravity or the grittiness of a cable drama show. In terms of the characters, I think James Spader is by far the best character and the best thing about the show. I love James Spader, and I think he's really good in this too. He sort of has a little bit of that Alan Shaw arrogance and eloquence. He's always the smartest guy in the room. But this time he's got a little bit more of a mean streak to him. He's a little bit more crafty. He's a little bit more, you're not quite sure if he's a good guy or a bad guy. So I'm liking him, but I think he's kind of carrying a bit of a mediocre show. And I think some of that might just be because they're trying to get so much in there to sort of set up the show. And then once they get into the groove of things, they'll be able to have more time to develop things in a more intelligent manner. Because at the moment, it feels a bit rushed, and then things just kind of end. I didn't think any of the ways they got the bad guy or anything at the end of the episode was really that clever or impactful.
Mm.
What are your thoughts on The Blacklist, Matt?
I think it's a good premise. It's a good show. It's got some great sort of direction and action and sort of some good stories and things. I think it isn't a great show, though. You're not putting it on the level of those great sort of some of the stuff that's coming out of cable at the moment. It's just not quite up to that standard. It does seem a little formulaic, a little bit. I think some of the dialogue's a little bit corny and things like that. It's just not a great show, but it's a really good show. And I think it's probably the best network show on TV from the little bits of network TV I've seen.
Take that, The Good Wife. Take it.
Well, I do hear The Good Wife's having a great season, though, so maybe we should check that out. I do hear this is the best season of The Good Wife. So it definitely that and The Good Wife are probably the two best, and it's doing really well. But it's really James Spader that makes this show. Like, without him and without his performance, this would be an average show. I think it's a very good one because of him. It's such an engaging character. It's such an interesting character. He's just got that presence and exuberance of Alan Shaw, cheekiness. Like, this is cheekiness where he knows better than you. He's always got the right answer. He's always in control. It's just so, so good. He does have that dark streak. Like, he does have that anti-hero quality to him. Like, there's an episode where the girl goes to him. She goes, "You're a monster." And he says, "Yes, I am." Like, just, yeah, that's who I am. That's what I am. Like, you know, it just, he's sometimes so cold. And, yeah, he's just so entertaining and fun to watch on TV that I'll keep watching this every week. It's so good. Just a side note with The Blacklist. The police, the FBI agents or CIA agents or whatever they are on The Blacklist are one of the worst sort of FBI, CIA agent teams we've ever seen on TV. You know,
I really don't like the guy from Homeland in the show.
Yes. He's incompetent. Yes. They keep on going, "We've got to find this guy, we've got to find this guy," and you're going, "Well, you're gonna," they're like, "Oh, we just found where the house is, we're gonna head there now," and you go, "Well, James Spader probably rocked up there 15 minutes ago." Like, he'll sort it all out, and you guys will rock up just after everything's happened. Like, they're constantly rocking up after James Spader's done everything. It's becoming a bit of a farce. Like, and they keep on not listening to him. He's like, "Maybe you should talk to this person." Like, no, we know what we're doing. And then just James Spader then has to sort of just roll his eyes and just go, "Okay, I'll," like, they obviously don't have a clue what they're doing. "I'll just have to take care of it all."
If you had been taken hostage, say, by a great TV villain, like Nina from 24,
yes,
would you rather have the CIA from The Blacklist or Miami Metro from Dexter trying to rescue you?
Oh, no.
Two of the worst agencies on TV. Which one is least incompetent, the one that you would hope would be trying to rescue you?
And James Spader isn't helping out the CIA. He's
no.
Not. Oh, my. This is Sophie's Choice. This is like, this is, oh. I feel like surely the CIA, FBI have more resources. Yeah. I think the Blacklist team is the team I'd go with. They've got more resources, and they are getting there like 5 minutes after James Spader. Like, this is like, they're at least turning up to the party. Like, it's like Miami Metro got to the point where they didn't even, like, they had people confessing to being murderers and they were just turning them away. So I think I'd go with the Blacklist team over Miami Metro. I'm enjoying the Blacklist. I want to keep watching it.
I think what we decided what we're going to do, rather than give our normal score rating, because, you know, there's only been a few episodes out, what we're going to do is just give a simple yes or no. Will we keep watching this show? So Matt's given his answer. Will you keep on watching The Blacklist? Yes.
Yes. Yes, I will.
Okay. This was kind of a tough one because there were things I liked about the show and I really love James Spader, but I did watch the first couple episodes a while ago when they first came out, and I haven't been back to it. So even though I think the show is all right and has some potential, I feel like I'd be being dishonest if I said yes. So I'm going to be fairly harsh and give this one a no.
Oh, my. Oh, my. James Spader got blacklisted by Jonathan Cook. Let's move on now. James Spader, he won all his Emmys for a David E. Kelly show. And we're actually seeing David E. Kelly return to TV this year with the show The Crazy Ones. It's a comedy. It's set in an ad firm. And we're seeing Robin Williams return to TV. How excited were you to hear that Robin Williams was coming back to TV?
Well, my memories of Mork and Mindy are watching it with my grandma when I was little.
Oh.
My grandma lived with us when I was young, back in England before we moved to Australia. And whenever I got in trouble, I just ran to grandma's room because I knew she wouldn't yell at me and I'd be able to hide and she'd give me cherries and we could watch some old TV show at least for a few minutes before mum and dad came and yelled at me. And I remember
I'd imagine it's harder for mum or dad to yell at you in front of a grandparent,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, that's also, you're going to get the less harsh yell. because they don't want their parents to like sort of like have a not nice memory of fighting and things.
The irony of which is I'm sure my grandma was far more strict with my mum. Which would have seemed totally unfair to my mum.
Yeah.
And with grandma, I remember a couple of the shows that seemed to be on that she liked. One was Buck Rogers and another was Mork and Mindy. That was my introduction to Robin Williams, and I thought he was very weird, very silly, very crazy. And I guess he was already popular, but I guess some of the things that he also became famous for, like Mrs. Doubtfire and Flubber, were also things that we would have watched growing up. So I haven't really thought much about Robin Williams recently. I hadn't considered him one of my favorites, but then when I heard he was back on TV, I got all these kind of childhood memories, and I was actually quite excited to watch him again.
Ah. I've seen a bit of Mork and Mindy. I didn't really like it. It seems a bit like he's a bit weird. It's a bit over the top. It's not that clever. You're just doing weird stuff all the time. I don't know. I think Robin Williams is a really strong actor. You know, you see some of the stuff in Good Will Hunting and some of the other sort of things. He's got serious chops. I feel like sometimes, though, when he's not reined in, he's just a bit all over the shop. And I know some people, I guess that's what people love about him, but I just find him a little over the shop sometimes. And I feel like Mork and Mindy, this was on full display, him being all over the shop.
I think he's got a little bit of that Jim Carrey type quality.
Yeah.
Vibe. Well, I guess, you know, people say Robin Williams came first. Jim Carrey has that Robin Williams quality. But what I meant was that he is very out there. It is very over the top. And with good material, it just combines for something hilarious. And with bad material, it bombs hard because it's just so in your face and over the top. And if it doesn't work, it really doesn't work.
Hmm. Now, I remember when we had our Return of Jafar podcast, we talked about the Robin Williams dispute with Disney that led him to not being in Return of Jafar. Yes. Probably something I'm sure he'd look back on, missing out on that as the biggest mistake of his career. We sided with Disney. We thought Disney were right in the dispute. We thought Robin Williams was being a bit of a sour grapes,
yeah.
Sour puss. Were you going to go into this, given that we've come out publicly against Robin Williams in a feud from the 90s? Would we be predisposed to not liking this show and not wishing him well, or are we over it?
I think I'm able to separate the two. I think this isn't it's not in any direct competition with the beloved Disney animation with this new show, The Crazy Ones. Yep. So I was prepared to give him the benefit of the doubt. Clean slate.
Yeah, I'm nothing if I'm not fair. So I think I can be pretty fair with this too. So very good. We think we'll be fair with this. So The Crazy Ones. We also see Sarah Michelle Gellar return to TV in this too from Buffy. So, you know, David E. Kelly, Robin Williams, Sarah Michelle Gellar. A triple threat return, really.
I didn't even know that this was a David E. Kelly show. I don't think I was even paying enough attention during the opening credits, because I didn't even realize it was a David E. Kelly show till the end of the first episode.
Oh, yes.
So as you said, it's set in an ad firm, and Robin Williams, I guess it's his firm, and Sarah Michelle Gellar is his daughter, and she's now come up to be a partner. I think it's called Robertson and Robertson. And I guess the premise of the show is them pitching an ad campaign for a large company each week or trying to solve a problem with them. And then also some of the interagency feuds or relationships between some of the other people that work there. It's basically the comedic version of Mad Men.
And it seems like each episode there's a pitch or two they've got to work on. Comedy ensues. That sort of thing. It's a bit harder to talk about this show than The Blacklist, to be honest. Like, where there's a very clear story, this episode's a bit more just come as you go. What are some of the elements you might want to talk about in this show?
Well, it's perhaps a little bit more character-based.
Yeah.
So, starting with Robin Williams, he just plays Robin Williams. He's doing silly voices. He's doing impersonations. Joke. And he finds himself funny, but a lot of the other characters find him a bit over the top or a bit much. And I think that's a good dynamic to have, because when it's funny, you laugh. And if the joke doesn't land, you have the ability to fall back on, well, it wasn't supposed to be funny, and the comedy is supposed to come from now the other characters judge him or, you know, begrudge him or whatever. So
that's a good covering your base move.
Yeah, it's have your cake and eat it too.
And I think the Robin Williams comedy style is a little polarizing. So I think that's a really sneaky David E. Kelly TV magic trick that we're seeing there. Very good.
He's a lawyer. It's those loopholes.
Yeah. Oh, very good. I think he's quite an engaging and drawing sort of main character. He's got some very strong moments, but I do find him grating a bit. I do find sometimes when he slips a bit too much into that Robin Williams skin, he's a little grating.
I can see that. But I think he's a likable character, and I'd say so far probably more hits than misses.
I'd say about 50-50. I'd go with a 50-50.
And so Michelle Gellar plays his daughter, and she's pretty juxtaposed to him. She's a little bit more serious. He goes for the huge ideas, and she goes for the smart, safe sort of ideas. I'm finding her a little bit less interesting. I think the only things I like about her are her interactions with her father. Her being so boring can kind of make her father funnier, but she herself, I haven't latched onto any aspect of her personality as of yet.
I'd agree with that pretty much. I think Sarah Michelle Gellar is good. She's doing a good job in the show. I think she was a fine casting choice. But, yeah, it's not a character I've fallen in love with or anything. It seems like she's just in there getting the job done. There's nothing that really to latch onto at this point. And I think that might be the problem with this show, maybe compared to a Boston Legal. That Alan Shaw-Denny Crane relationship was so compelling. It was so engaging. Yeah. It was such a foundation for that show. And even when other bits of the show didn't work, you had that really strong relationship there that you just enjoy. You found so funny and touching and sweet and engaging. Whereas I think this show doesn't have that relationship at its core where, you know, I don't care about Robin Williams and his daughter as much as I did about Alan and Denny.
No. And it's not because the show is flippant with the characters. You do have moments where they go over his parenting history and she tries to learn to drive again, and they try and tie these things about how important they are to each other. And it was just a little bit cheesy. It felt more like an obligatory positive message that shows from the 80s were forced to put into each of their episodes, as opposed to something that came from the characters that made you really warm to them.
Mm.
And we also have a couple of side characters. There's a ditzy girl, and there's the handsome guy that just gets everything. Everything goes well for him all the time because he's so handsome. And then the douche from the newsroom, playing a slightly less douchey guy that I guess is the fall guy, the anti-Zachary, the anti-handsome guy, where things just seem to go wrong for him all the time. And I find those two quite funny. I think they're good. The back and forth are entertaining.
Yeah, they're good. They're really good. And I know the handsome guy people are really enjoying, the critics and things like that. So, yeah, they're going really well there.
So are we going to give this a verdict, Matt? Yes or no? Will you keep watching?
I'm a little on the fence with this one. I'm not loving it. I'm not finding it heaps funny. I'm not really that into it. But because of David E. Kelly and because I am enjoying it, I think there's a lot of potential there. I think with this cast and with this writer and with this premise, and with some of the jokes I've seen and some of the moments I've seen in the first handful of episodes, I've seen enough to know there's potential there for it to be a better show than it is. So I will, yes, stick with the crazy ones. I think it's good enough and there's enough potential there to stick with it for now. But I am on the fence.
This is another show that I'm a little bit mixed on as well, but I think the fact that it's only 20 minutes instead of 40 minutes makes it a little bit easier to give another shot. And even though there are some cheesy things, I don't love everything about the show, I am finding it pretty funny, and I am a fan of David E. Kelly, so I do think there's potential there. I'm going to give this a yes. If I gave The Blacklist a light no, this is a light yes. Just falling on the right side of the scales for the crazy ones.
Sounds like we're on a similar page with that one. Robin Williams, obviously, a David E. Kelly show where you get to give big speeches, and a guy with the, you know, Oscar winner, Robin Williams, you could think he is firmly in line to win an Emmy next year for this role. But someone who's got someone who's very familiar with the lead actor in a comedy series Emmy Award, he's won at least three of them for Family Ties and Spin City, is Michael J. Fox, headlining the Michael J. Fox Show. How excited were you to see Michael J. Fox was coming back onto TV, Jonathan?
I really like Michael J. Fox. I haven't actually seen that much Family Ties. I watched a little bit of Spin City when I was younger, but I like both of them. What I really love Michael J. Fox in, I think everyone did, was Back to the Future. Absolutely classic film. And the sequels are quite strong by sequel standards as well.
Yeah.
We did see Michael J. Fox make a little bit of a return on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Mm.
And that was a season and episode I really, really liked of Curb. So I have pretty high hopes for Michael J. Fox returning to TV.
And he sort of guests in about 8 episodes of The Good Wife every year too. He's in The Good Wife an awful lot.
Was he on Boston Legal? Did he make
Boston Legal. He also won an Emmy for guest starring on Rescue Me. So he's been getting around a bit, popping into various Emmy award-winning shows.
Could be a good sign for the Michael J. Fox show.
Could be a good sign. I love Michael J. Fox. He's great in Back to the Future. I think he is so good in Family Ties. Like, you know, that show is a very average family sitcom that is made really good by him being in it, and his character of Alex P. Keaton is just, he's great. And then the role of Michael Flaherty in Spin City, another great role. His comedic timing and his comedic expression and his physical comedy is just so good. I loved him in Spin City. He's one of my favorite sitcom characters from the thousands. Yeah, I think he's incredible. I was so excited to hear he's going to be back on TV with his own show.
So the Michael J. Fox show is not about Michael J. Fox. It's called the Michael J. Fox show, but he plays a character called Michael Landry.
That's like what old sitcoms used to do. Here's an example. The Dick Van Dyke show. Dick Van Dyke did not play a character called Dick Van Dyke in the Dick Van Dyke show.
All right. So as well as a callback to the 80s with Michael J. Fox, they're doing it with the names of the show. He plays a famous newscaster that won a couple of daytime Emmys and a Peabody Award. Very, very popular. Everybody loved Michael Henry. But then he got Parkinson's, and he had to battle with that for a while. And I guess now he's making a comeback, and it's about him getting back into work and him and his family's new life.
Yes. Oh, by the way, this just in, Jonathan, in the Dick Van Dyke show, Dick Van Dyke played a character called Robert Simpson Petrie. So he didn't even carry the dick.
Is that an expression? Like, and we'll be seeing whether the Michael J. Fox show can carry the dick in our Screen Verdict review.
Oh, my. But anyway, to answer your question, yeah. So maybe it is about Michael J. Fox, this show. An Emmy Award-winning TV star getting diagnosed with Parkinson and then coming back to TV.
And they haven't quite explained it, but it's sort of shot, I don't know, It's kind of got these confessionals, a little bit like an office, but the rest of the show is shot like a normal sitcom. It's not constantly a fly on the wall type direction.
Okay, yeah, this is annoying me to no end. we've got these stupid confessionals that don't have really any clever, funny... Like, it's not bringing anything to the table in terms of comedy or even really story. Like, it's a very non-interesting way to tell the story. And the first episode, they had this stupid premise that this girl's making a video on her dad for English class and that's why she's filming the confessionals or whatever. But then she's not making it in the second, third, fourth, whatever episode, but they've still got the confessionals. Like, I just don't know why they have that in there at all. It baffles me.
No, it hasn't been explained. And like you, I don't think they're adding a lot to the show. It's almost as if they've seen other shows do it, and you go, oh, don't you really like it in Parks and Rec when Amy Poehler like says something funny to the camera? And they haven't really thought about why they do that.
Yeah.
No one's told them that they need an explanation for why all of a sudden a character is talking to the camera.
And it's like a bad quality. Like, it's all like not shot as well as the, like, it's a really like, if The Office and Parks and Rec is documentary style, this is like amateur, like student film style. Like, it's like they're in a room just like doing a confessional. Like, they're on a reality show.
So as well as Michael J. Fox and the name of the show, I feel like it has a very 80s feel to it. It's this family show. You've got a loving wife and then these argumentative kids, and then there's this silly cute one, the slightly over sexual aunt. Everyone kind of fits very firmly into particular molds and stereotypes, and each episode has a moral of the story, and it has a nostalgic, sentimental ending. I really just don't like the style of the show. In order for this to be remotely watchable, the jokes have to land. It has to be very funny show in order to pull that sentimental nonsense off. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. It's not very funny. I think I've watched three episodes and there are a couple of things that were amusing, but I don't think I've laughed out loud. And most of the time I've just been thinking, how many episodes do I have to give this until I can say I gave it a fair shot?
What was that number?
Three. I've watched three episodes.
I sort of agree with a lot of your criticisms there, but there's something about Michael J. Fox that is enjoyable to watch. There's sort of a sweetness to this, to him as an actor, and there's something engaging about his performance. I think his facial expression, like, and this is interesting because he's got Parkinson's, but I think his facial expressions still have really good sort of comedic timing and expression to them. There's something about Michael J. Fox that's keeping me interested in this show that isn't that funny and isn't that well structured, but it's just a little, there's stuff that's working there. This has potential. It could be a better show. It could be a good show. Just needs better writing.
I sort of feel that way about Michael J. Fox. He's the best thing about the show, but even in that second episode where he had a crush on the neighbor, I thought they made him a little bit irritating and unlikable. It's just jumping ahead to the verdict. No, this is an easy no for me. I won't be watching again unless, I don't know, I'm with other people and it just happens to be on and that's what they want to watch. I don't hate it so much that I'm just going to walk out the room. I do still have some love for Michael J. Fox, but I won't be choosing to keep up with the series.
Yeah. Can I just say, like, when he had the crush on the neighbor, that was sort of okay, believable and stuff. When he starts cock-blocking his best friend.
Yeah, that was,
That was very unbelievable. That was shocking. You were married, Jonathan, and there was a cute girl that I was hitting on. I don't care how jealous you might be. You're standing your ground. Like, you're not...
Especially in front of you and my wife.
Yes. That was just very unbelievable. And again, the writing, like, there's a lot of room for growth with this show. Here's the thing.
That's a positive spin on it, Matt. There's a lot of poor qualities, and you've decided to go, there's a lot of room for growth. To me, that says there's a lot of things to fix.
Yeah. So there are. They need to do a number on it. But they've got some elements there that can be turned. They've got something
they've
to
work.
They've
got Michael J. Fox. That's what you mean.
Betsy Brandt's okay. She's all right in the show. She's one of the less annoying sort of TV wives we've seen.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. I'm on the reverse blacklist situation for you. Because I want to give this a no. But I probably am going to watch a couple more episodes because I'm enjoying Michael J. Fox. But I'm actually going to give it a no, okay? It's a bit of a dishonest answer because I am still going to watch it, but it's not good enough for me to really give it a yes. So I'm going to give it a yes.
All right. It's an easy no for me.
Yeah. Coming up next, as in now, Will Arnett, he topped our list. He's in The Millers. Were you excited to hear Will Arnett was back on TV with The Millers?
I love Will Arnett. We said Job is the greatest sitcom character of the past 20 years. I think he himself is very funny. I like him in interviews and things. I don't think any of his other roles, little small things in TV or movies, have lived up to that level. But I still thought that Will Arnett could be very funny in a new show. And I liked Margot Martindale in Justified, which is a dramatic show. So I thought that was a bit of an interesting combination. I wasn't really sure what to expect, but I was expecting good things from Will Arnett.
Yeah, I love Will Arnett. You know, you could talk me into greatest sitcom character of all time with Job, to be honest. I wasn't hugely excited for this, mainly because, like, last year, Will Arnett had done a sitcom the last couple of years called Up All Night with Christina Applegate. So it wasn't like, you know, this is his first TV role since Job. Let's see what he can do. And I was a little disappointed Up All Night. It's just not the kind of show I enjoyed. It wasn't necessarily Will Arnett's fault that I didn't like it, but I didn't really love it. So it sort of took a bit of the wind out of my sails. And when I read the premise for this show, it didn't quite whet my appetite. So I wasn't actually that excited for this show. To be honest, I only just watched it the first time right before this podcast after my friends left for about one thing. I'm about 1.5 episodes in, Jonathan. I know we said we watched 3 of each, but I've got an idea. I've got an idea of what the show's about.
Your verdict will be, will I finish episode 2?
Yes.
Well, that's a very strong no if you're not even prepared to finish a half-watched episode. So the premise of the show is Will Arnett is playing a character that, again, is on TV. He does the news, but he's a bit of a more up-and-coming sort of newsman. He walks the streets and does sort of fairly low-level news stories. But he's quite successful, seems to be kind of the golden boy of the family. And her sister has a goofy husband that her parents don't like as much. And the parents come over, bloody, bloody, blah, find out, whatever, this is getting too long. But they end up splitting, and it's about him dealing with his newly split up parents. His mum's over-controlling, his dad's hopeless on his own, all the problems that they had together, him and his sister now have to deal with.
Yes. That's the premise, that's the show. This is actually, I think, created by Greg Garcia, who is the My Name is Earl creator. He won an Emmy for My Name is Earl for writing that. And also, this might be interesting, in the writer's room for The Millers is John Cochran, who won the last season of Survivor.
That was a pretty random piece of trivia for you there.
Yeah, he won Survivor, and then they gave him a job writing for The Millers. He wasn't in TV before he won Survivor.
That's great. Now, something you'll notice instantly about the show is it's a multicam show with a laugh track, something that is kind of an instant turn-off for me when watching television. Why does this format still even exist?
I don't know. The Big Bang Theory gets very good ratings. It's the top-rated comedy.
Yeah, that and 2.5 Men. But even the Michael J. Fox show, which was about as 80s as it gets, even it was a single cam show without a laugh.
Yeah.
Something about this show, rather than the Michael J. Fox show, is it's very jokey. There's a punchline every 10 or 20 seconds. So regardless of whether it's funny or not, at least they try.
Yeah. They're swinging.
Yeah. I'm going to have to say, once again, the old favourite on the new show is the best thing about the show. I'm liking Will Arnett, I think.
Okay.
His timing's very good. Some of his expressions and things are a little bit Job-esque, except he's a little bit less of the fall guy, a little bit less silly than Job. I think there's a reasonable amount of hits in the show. I do actually laugh watching the show. Some things will get me to laugh out loud. But it's quite an annoying show as well. Margot Mundell, the overly controlling mother, is very in your face. She's the definition of grating. If you don't like her character, you won't really be able to enjoy the show because she's arguably the lead over Will Arnett. And I think I just generally find the characters a little bit one-dimensional, and they have these sort of annoying qualities that just define them, and they go too far in that direction. The father is just way too stupid. He does just some ridiculous things. The mother is way too in your face. And then the sister and the husband are just too bland. I don't think the sister has said one funny thing yet.
Well, it's interesting what you say about Margot Mundell, because some of the things I've been reading say she's the best thing about the show. Maybe it's just because it's polarizing, but that's quite interesting. It's interesting to see Will Arnett, because Arrested Development was such a great thing for him. And since then, he's done some movies that haven't really been set the world on fire. And he did the Up All Night show where he played a very straight man. It was very un-Job-like. And in this show, he's got a bit more of the quirks, a bit more of the comedy. But again, much more of the straight, sensible anchor for the show. Part of me wonders whether he's worried about getting typecast as a Job. And if he isn't, like, maybe he's trying to sort of pull a Ted Danson in showing that he can play a whole range of different great characters on TV. Doesn't all have to be the same type of character. And I like that sort of, but I think he's better as the goofy sidekick than the lead straight man.
All Will Arnett needs is to go on a racist rant, and he's pretty much had the career of Michael Richards. He had this great role as this quirky supporting character that everybody loves on a hugely successful show, and since then has kind of struggled to find his feet in other roles. I can't even really think of anything that Michael Richards did. I don't know if the Millers will have any staying power. I think he's quite good in it.
Oh, no, he is.
But he just hasn't quite found that the right role yet, I don't think.
Yeah, and look, Michael Richards actually had the Michael Richards show after Seinfeld. Have you heard of the Michael Richards show? I'm not sure if he played someone called Michael Richards in that or not.
That failed to carry the dick in that show.
Yeah, very much so. I found the show a bit more entertaining than I thought I would. I thought the Millers were sort of fun. There were bits of it that I didn't really... I'm not completely bought into this premise yet of the divorced parents and their relationship and things. But it was okay for a laugh. And I think Will Arnett and Margot Mundell are good actors, so they're grounding it quite well. Here we go. The Michael Richards Show. This just in. Breaking news from TV past. Michael Richards played a character in the Michael Richards Show called Vic Narduzza. So there you go. Not carrying the dick at all.
And he chose to carry the Vic instead.
Yes. He picked up the Vic rather than carrying the dick. Okay. Very good. But this show really isn't lighting me up or getting me excited in any way.
Getting to the verdicts, I think because there are some potential laughs there, I think this is a show I could maybe watch if it happened to be on, but I didn't like it enough to pursue it. So I'm going to give this a no.
Yeah, I agree. No.
Okay, so that's our four new shows with old favourites. I think what we're going to do next is give them a rank, a quick 1 to 4 as part of our final verdict. For me, this is very simple. 4, The Michael J. Fox Show. 3, The Millers. 2, The Blacklist. 1, The Crazy Ones.
Okay, for me, I'm going to go top down because I haven't quite thought the bottom of my list yet and it'll give me time to think of it. 1, The Blacklist. 2, The Crazy Ones. 3, The Michael J. Fox Show. And 4, The Millers.
Okay, so we agreed on which two were 1 and 2 and which two were 3 and 4, but we flipped both of those.
Yes. If you're playing at home.
If you've got time for one comedy show and one drama show, I think we're recommending The Crazy Ones and The Blacklist.
Yes. Right, so now we need to go to our housekeeping segment. There's some pretty exciting news in housekeeping. And by pretty exciting news, I think two sad stories. one from Jonathan and one from me. Get the Kleenex ready, guys, because
these are some pretty hot stories.
I've heard Jonathan's. He hasn't heard mine. And Jonathan, this is you thought some of my podcast therapy was bad last year. Just wait till you get a load of this year's in the housekeeping. Housekeeping. It's open. It's open. Good. Jonathan, we'll start with yours. I hear you got a sad story.
Well, we'll kick it off on a high note. Verdict. Screen Verdict is a very popular podcast, so I'm told. You can find it at facebook.com/Screen Verdict Podcast or on iTunes or on Podomatic. But as well as that, if you're a fan of the show, you can buy Screen Verdict merchandise.
Oh, my. Oh, this is so exciting.
At cafepress.com/Screen Verdict Podcast. And myself, also as a fan of the podcast, attempted to buy an iPhone case with the lovely Screen Verdict logo on it. And I had it ordered and delivered to the place that I'm staying at in Los Angeles. And I thought, man, it should have come by now. And I checked followed the tracking number, and it said it had been delivered. I looked, and I hadn't had anyone come to my door, and I checked the post box. I sent an email trying to track it down. No response. No response. I am sans Screen Verdict iPhone case. However, the one plus in this sad, sad tale of loss is that we were able to track the sales of these items because we set up the store. There is only one. This has been the only one purchase so
what?
Far.
These aren't flooding people.
The T-shirts, the Screen Verdict mugs, the Screen Verdict clocks, all of which are literally actually available. Those are all things you can buy at the store. I'm sure those are just flying out of the e-shop. But the phone case...
Allegedly. Possibly.
But the phone case is the only one to have been bought. So if you see someone with a Screen Verdict iPhone case, as much as we love the free advertising, you stop that person and ask them where they got it from, because they are a thief. They have stolen that from the Screen Verdict podcasters themselves. So you as the Screen Verdict listeners have the chance to be our own crime watch out on the streets.
I don't think there's anything much more hot than a Screen Verdict iPhone case that someone could want to steal. Like, it probably got delivered to your house, as dropped off near the door or sticking out of the letterbox. It's probably a bit of a big envelope. So, let's have a sneaky look at this. They opened it up, thought, oh man, Eureka, I've hit gold, a Screen Verdict iPhone case. Bam. I'm hitting up Venice Beach with this. I'm doing it all. Like, especially if you're in the Southern California LA area, and you see someone one of these, that'll be it. Like, keep your eyes peeled. And I'm going to offer a prize.
Hey.
If you are able to find Jonathan's Screen Verdict iPhone case, and return it to him, or let us know about it. We'll obviously pay. I'm sure Jonathan will pay for some postage or whatever for you to get it back to him. Although if you're in LA, you might be able to meet up. I'm going to offer you. I'm going to personally get you your own Screen Verdict iPhone case.
Hang on a second there, Matt. I don't think we can offer them the exact same thing, because to them, if they find the person with the case, they get the case. There is no advantage to giving it to us instead of just keeping the case. Either way, they've got a Screen Verdict iPhone case, but in that scenario, they just keep it rather than having to go through the effort of trying to post it and then wait for you to send one back. I think we should offer them a T-shirt or something.
Wait.
We need to give them the incentive to give me the case.
I love how you think this is a worse idea than your initial idea, which was to not give them anything. They could have kept the Screen Verdict iPhone case or not gotten a Screen Verdict iPhone case. I'm offering them the chance to get their very own Screen Verdict. I think it's the perfect prize. It would, I guess, if that was the prize, make more sense for us to just let them know you can keep your one, we'll just order another one for us.
And if we're prepared to pay for that, I might as well just order another one.
Yeah, I guess. I just want not the thief to have the Screen Verdict iPhone case. I want the hero to have the Screen Verdict iPhone case.
This isn't to benefit any listeners. It isn't to solve our problem. It is just to spite the thief. So that's my tale of woe. Matt, what's yours?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I go to university doing a Masters of Teaching degree. It's a lot of fun. It's great.
I thought you were learning how to make scare canisters.
Maybe.
Didn't quite get the grades to get into Monsters University.
This is Sydney University.
Attending the lowly Sydney University.
Yeah. But, okay. So, I was meeting up with someone from uni, and they said, how are you feeling about this girl? I said, what are you talking about? And they said, because everyone's saying you like this person. I said, whoa. Let's backpedal a bit. why is everyone saying I like this person? I said, because apparently this person said at a party that you had a crush on them and had asked them out. It's like, okay, I'm curious. When did this apparently happen? And she said, a couple of months ago or something. I said, are you sure that long ago? She's like, yeah. I'm like, I definitely didn't ask that person out then. I don't remember that happening at all.
Do you have selective amnesia, Matt? Was this a traumatic experience and you just decided, your brain just sort of blacked it out?
Well, clearly this broke my heart so much, getting rejected by this girl broke my heart so much that I've just blocked it out. It's just been wiped from my memory.
Well, this seems to be working out for you. I think most people, if they got that upset over something, could just black it out and then it end up being a funny story on the podcast.
Eternal sunshine myself. yeah, it's very weird. Now, to be fair, full disclosure, okay, I like to be open and honest with the podcast, give the full context. I did ask this person to a movie a couple of weeks ago. Okay, so just to be clear.
That's the best part of you blacking it out, though. You're just going to keep asking this person out. Like, you've asked this person out, they rejected you, you just, like, start weeping, it was this traumatic event that you just wiped, and then consequently, every couple of weeks, you ask them to a movie.
Yeah, now...
Are you more confused by the fact that this was considered to be an ask out, or the fact that she thought that this was a great topic of conversation for a party with all the people in your course?
Probably the latter. Like, I could understand a girl misinterpreting the ask out, but what I don't get is why that would be worth talking about at a party. And now there's this narrative about me out there. That everyone's thinking about me at uni, that I can't really do anything to dispel.
Yeah, if you're nice to her, people go, oh, he still likes her. If you're mean to her, they go, oh, he resents her for rejecting him.
Yeah, and if you try to clear the air, if you go, just so everyone knows I didn't ask her out. Oh, yeah, of course not. Of course not. Doff protest too much. Like, I feel like I've taken a step back. I feel like I'm now getting rejected by girls I haven't asked out. I've gone from asking girls out and getting rejected to not asking girls out and getting rejected.
What feels worse, getting rejected by someone that you asked out, or getting rejected by someone that didn't even give you the opportunity before you even got in there, has just ruled that out as a possibility?
I feel like emotionally the first one's probably harder because you're somewhat invested in the person when you ask them out. I feel like the second one's a bit worse though.
You just need to ask someone out then.
Yeah.
Because either way, if they say yes or no, at least there's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. It feels like I'm doing a master's degree at university and everyone's acting like it's at high school with gossip and rumours. Everyone thinks you've got a crush on this person. What are we? We've got crushes on each other?
I'm sure you'll get a job somewhere and then the office will be exactly the same.
So this is just life. Life is like high school.
Yeah, then you get like a high-powered government job. I bet Obama has to put up with the same stuff. It's like people in Congress.
Yeah.
Do you know Michelle was hanging out with McCain? So, no, nah, it was just casual, man. They just went to see Captain Phillips.
Also, a very non-romantic movie, Captain Phillips, can I say? Has this been a Chinese whispers situation where just the information has changed?
It's gone from someone says, oh, have you seen that, a new Tom Hanks movie? And she says, oh, my friend Matt asked me to go, but I wasn't able to make it. Has turned to Matt has a crush on me and asked me out on a date and I rejected him, purple monkey dishwasher.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
So there's two sob stories for you in housekeeping. If you have any advice for us, maybe hit us up with a message.
Please let us know.
We definitely want to restore our reputations and get our iPhone cases back. Coming up soon on the podcast, perhaps a little bit of a Marvel mix. There's the TV series Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and also the new Thor film coming out. So
there you go, people out there who think we're cable drama snobs. Another network drama being talked about next week. I have actually secured someone to go see Thor with this week. They can do it. They're confirmed. They're not a girl. They're not gay, not that there'd be anything wrong with that, but there'll be no ambiguity of why I've asked her to see the movie. Just want to see Thor for the podcast.
hopefully all of you can find yourselves a mandate for the film, and we'll catch up with you for our review. Until then, stay informed, and we'll catch you next week.
Yeah. See you guys. Bye.